This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. I'm here at the Philadelphia City Hall on the final day of the Democratic National Convention. And I just had the chance to meet Shah Grogan Brown, who is with the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance. And Shah has been working alongside dozens of others from the same organization to draw attention to the coup in Honduras, the murder of the indigenous environmental activist Berta Cáceres, and the links with Hillary Clinton's foreign policy, who was, of course, Secretary of State at the time of the Honduras coup and endorsed the coup. Shah was also part of a delegation of folks that rode a caravan from the GOP convention in Cleveland to the Philadelphia convention here of the Democratic Party. And we'll also discuss the Trans-Pacific Partnership, grassroots opposition versus political endorsement by both parties. That's coming up right now.
Yeah, my name is Shah Grogan Brown with the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance. Well, so I actually live here in Philadelphia, but I came here with a group of 45 people on a bus from Cleveland to Philadelphia, from the RNC to the DNC. And we wanted to, with our alliance, we wanted to organize a set of people from our membership that really could call out what we feel like is both the sort of hate and racism and misogyny that we're seeing sort of from the Trump-style politics all the way to the militarism that we're seeing in sort of Hillary-style politics, and that we really feel like neither option is really representing what the majority of our folks in the movement really need. So we started off in Cleveland last Tuesday. Feels like it was forever ago. And we started off actually by joining up with the folks from Mi Gente and Iraq Veterans Against the War to organize a big action to wall off Trump. And so really talking, you know, the messaging was, if Trump wants his wall, we gave it to him. And we actually walled him in. So we blocked the entrance to the convention, and really talking about calling out that his call for a wall and for, barring and deporting all Muslims from this country, and for all of his anti-immigrant hate and racism is really unacceptable. So we started off by joining up with folks to build a wall. We also then did, the next day, we did a pledge of resistance. And so we also really wanted to come together with folks. And we had people from the front lines of mountaintop removal in Kentucky to folks that are fighting the Chevron refinery, oil refinery in Richmond, California, to folks that are organizing in Missouri around racial justice and environmental justice, folks on indigenous lands fighting to defend water and land and peoples from extractivism, and also people that are talking about gender justice and feminism and really looking at the spectrum of genders that we think needs to be respected. And so we came together to pledge resistance on the final day of the RNC. As Trump was nominated, we stood outside with a bilingual pledge of resistance to keep working together and to support. So Berta Cáceres was a internationally known organizer from Honduras, and she was most known for her work to stop the hydroelectric dam, the Agua Zarca Dam in Gualcarque River. She was an indigenous environmentalist, feminist, and she was assassinated in her home on March 2nd. And so we have joined up with a number of movements from around the world in solidarity with the Honduran movement and her organization in particular, which is called COPIN, to demand justice. They still haven't investigated her murder, and the family has actually been calling for an independent investigation by the Commission of the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights to investigate not only who actually carried out the assassination, but who ordered it. The family has not been involved in the investigation. We've been calling for that. We also are calling out Hillary Clinton's involvement. She actually endorsed and supported the coup in 2009, which has led to the conditions that now have supported not only the assassination of Berta Cáceres in her own home, but also actually hundreds of other organizers from the same movement. And so we brought actually Laura Cáceres, who's one of the daughters of Berta Cáceres, on the caravan with us, as well as Rosalina Dominguez, who's from the same organization, COPIN, to be able to lift up their voice and really actually call for support for a bill that's in the House right now. It's H.R. 5474. It's called the Berta Cáceres for Human Rights in Honduras Act. And it was put forward by Hank Johnson from Georgia. And it calls for an end to all U.S. support of security services in Honduras until the human rights violation situation is resolved. So that includes both military and police, aid, financial aid and training.
So you and I understand hundreds of other protesters were there at the DNC. Tell me a little bit about what were the messages. What was Laura Cáceres' message to the DNC, to the Democratic Party, and to Hillary Clinton?
Well, I actually have a quote from her. We really were hoping she could be here with you, but she's on a plane right now. I have been so inspired by her for the past 9 days. But she's the third daughter. Berta had four children who are all now very involved in the fight for justice for their mother. And they very clearly were trained by her. She actually told us a story. We stopped in Pittsburgh on the way here and in Baltimore to build with movements in those places. And at an event in Pittsburgh, Laura gave us more of a detailed story of the last time she saw her mother. And she said the last time she saw her was actually at the airport because of the violence and the persecution of Berta and so many others. Actually, some of her children are living outside of the country to protect it for protection and also to, you know, be in educating themselves. And so she said the last time she saw her, she told her, "Listen, hija, don't be afraid. If you hear that something has happened to me, don't be afraid. We need to keep fighting for a better world." And so she really carries that. And she basically said now the movement, her family and the movement really see Berta not, there's a saying that Berta didn't die, she multiplied. Or Berta didn't die, she became millions, she lives within us. And so she actually calls her an ancestor. And if it's okay, I'll just read a quote from Laura. She says, "On March 2nd, the racist violence that says that we, indigenous people, black people, and all non-white people are incapable of thinking and dreaming of other forms of development or self-determination of our lands was concentrated in the body of my mother. But also on March 2nd, an ancestor, a guide, was born, a spirit who now guides us to defend life, the rivers, the planet, and to defend ourselves and our lives. To defend ourselves and our lives is to fight for the life of all humanity." So Laura really talks about, she's so strong and powerful. You know, this is actually only 4 months ago that her mother was brutally assassinated in her home. And Laura is out in the streets internationally calling out for justice. And so really what her message to the Democratic Party and to Hillary Clinton and to all, to the entire U.S. Congress is to really support this act that would cut military aid and send a message that our country should not be supporting this kind of violence that is killing people just for defending their land and their water.
So, Shah, we know that if Trump becomes president, there's no hope for anybody. But we also know that if Hillary Clinton becomes president, let me ask you to answer that question. What sort of foreign policy do you expect under a Clinton presidency? We saw what sort of foreign policy we got when she was Secretary of State, but with her in the White House?
I'm not a political analyst, but I imagine we would see much of the same. And I think that's what a lot of us are afraid of, honestly. I think a lot of us are afraid of the kinds of decisions that Hillary Clinton has made in the past around intervention, around militarism, unjust wars, supporting coups like the one in Honduras. It's definitely something that a lot of our communities are worried about.
So what about the links also between the politics and the political situation in Honduras and free trade agreements? We've seen the impacts of NAFTA on Mexico, and now we have the Trans-Pacific Partnership that the U.S. is, you know, that President Obama has championed. Hillary Clinton, well, she's kind of gone back and forth, but just recently Terry McAuliffe came out and said that when she's president, she will sign it.
Yeah, I definitely think this is what we hear from both our members within the U.S. and our allies around the world of the global south, that we really have seen the impacts of free trade agreements. And I think Berta is also an example of what happens when there is a free trade agreement that gives transnational corporations the right to protect their profits over people's lives, literally. And the Agua Zarca Dam is no exception to that. The DESA is the company that is running, that is trying to build that dam, and there are clear links. There's actually been already links between the assassination of Berta and people who are within the company that is trying to build that dam. So I think that in terms of free trade agreements, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, we think definitely will be more of the same, and will continue allowing transnational corporations to really prioritize their profit over all life and land and water.
So clearly there are no good options when it comes to the White House. I mean, certainly some people say that the Green Party and Jill Stein are a good option, but if Jill Stein doesn't become president, the activism, how important is the grassroots activism in between elections? Because, the left tends to get carried away with hopes on the shoulders of people like Bernie Sanders. But between elections, how important is it to continue the grassroots activism?
I think the left is a mix, right, in the U.S. And so I think the part of the left that we work with has a commitment to continuing the really important and necessary base building and organizing that we think needs to happen in all communities in the U.S., especially those that are at the front lines of the climate crisis, of racial injustice, of police violence. And I think that's part of actually why we were founded as an alliance, is to bring all of these organizations together across all of our sectors and in a relationship with international movements so that we can have a really deep understanding of the issues that are impacting all of us around the globe. And I think, you know, there's a spectrum in our alliance of who people are going to vote for or not vote. Some folks say they may sit this one out. Other folks are still kind of figuring out what to do with this current situation. But I think underneath all of it, the most important thing is that we have to be staying connected with each other and organizing together and linking up our organizations and being in organization, because we also really believe that that's the best way that we can actually build power to shift this country, you know, especially with the growing majority people of color in this country. There's a ton of organizations that are doing incredible community organizing, incredible work that we are really inspired by. And so we think that's the best thing we need to do right now, no matter who becomes president. There definitely is a difference. I don't want to say that Trump and Hillary would be the same, because I don't think that's true. But I think either way, what we are seeing right now is an increase in sort of a normalization of a culture of where it's okay to punch black people at a rally, or where it's okay, people are getting let off for, police are getting let off for killing innocent black people, particularly men, but also women and transgender people. I think we see a culture of the normalization of militarism and the normalization of almost sort of this, you know, I think the white working class is in an interesting position right now. We're seeing a lot of feelings that have been held for a long time now kind of coming out, and there's not a lot of room to hold for it. And so I think Trump is actually really monopolizing and sort of capitalizing on the discontent that the white working class feels in this country. And I think that's also a big growing point for our movement. We also work with folks at the Vermont Workers Center and the Southern Maine Workers Center, who are primarily white working class, organizing the white working class, to think about what options do we have. I think there's a lot that we have to do in the coming period to stay strong as a movement together, because no matter what, these cultures, and this is sort of more normalized than it has been before, and we need to be as strong as we can right now.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Shah Grogan Brown is with the Grassroots Global Justice Alliance, speaking to me in front of Philadelphia City Hall on the final day of the Democratic National Convention. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and we're online at risingupwithsonali.com.